now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always, always been in you, and more importantly, finding the courage to discover who you are and have always been. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between, because each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. How is your heart today? I hope your heart is well. I hope you are well. I hope that even if you are struggling today, you will be able to find the rest and comfort and the peace that you need. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/ Reclaiming Authenticity. That's all one word right there. Or my personal website, it's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So my personal one, www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And again, there are places there in which you can leave me your comments. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show this evening, that's a toll-free number. It is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break, about halfway through. I'll take your calls. So, however, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me tonight, and trust me, I fully appreciate it when you do, but just in case you can't, these broadcasts are now podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, you can just go on the website and you can download them. And also, they're now available for download on Audible and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM. That's New York on the weekends. I believe it is Saturday. So. Well, as you know, if you've been following me for some time, at the beginning of these shows, I always like to share just my deep-seated belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of, you know, our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, character traits, so on and so forth, personality, and all that. And how we live our giftedness is in and through various relationships. And this is a very important aspect when considering who we are as a soul. Because although we may have similar gifts or similar skills or talents or strengths or character traits, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. Oh, you know, people can try and imitate how we do things, but no one has the ability to be able to duplicate us. We can't duplicate one another. It's just, that's the way it is, because we have this thisness. Because what lies within us is what 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as aceitas. I love that. It's the only Latin word I know. Aceitas. It's a thisness. It's a uniqueness, if you will. And I try to explain this to kids because that's kind of an abstract, you know, concept, a thisness or a uniqueness. But I liken it to the thumbprint, that everybody has a thumbprint. Okay, so we have these shared human experiences, but no two thumbprints are alike. So therefore, everybody has a chaetas or a uniqueness. Okay. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, millions of people out there never have a chance to discover their uniqueness or their chaetas, because we're often told to look in all the wrong places. You know, for example, we're told to look for our thisness in all the externals of life, or look for your uniqueness in the accumulation of your things or the degrees or accomplishments or the accolades and so on and so forth. But this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and chaetas is to be found. Instead, the full expression of who we are is to be found within, at the soul level. And yet, when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual woundedness in relationships. I mean, we're a relational being, so it's almost like sooner or later, it's going to happen. And more often, we can go along in life, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our uniqueness, you know, from other people, or we might push our giftedness way down so that others cannot see it. Or perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything, or whatever, any other voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing special to you. And that's just wrong, because we all have an achaitas. We all have a uniqueness. We all have, you know, special. We're all special. We all have that uniqueness. And it's kind of ironic that, you know, the relationships in which we receive these wounds, or we wound others, to be honest, you know, just might be within our own families. They just might be with our coworkers. They might even be amongst friends. And yet, transformation is possible when we heal ourselves through forgiveness, letting go of the things that just keep us bound, letting go of resentment, letting go of, well, I have to get revenge. And we can also heal through kindness and compassion. And over time, you know, we learn how to love ourselves and be gentle with ourselves. Because, you know, when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be compassionate with another person. And when we have forgiven ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. When we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, that every decision that we have made has brought us to this very moment, we then discover how this opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are able to truly know ourselves as a soul and live from our soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others to see themselves as a soul, because we're going to be treating ourselves differently, and therefore we're going to be treating one another differently. So all in all, this transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. It begins in us. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, you know, summed up in one word, my favorite word, namaste. You know, basically, you know, hopefully I don't take too much liberty with the translation here, but I think of namaste as, because I see myself as a lighted soul. This allows me to greet your soul of light, of who you are. So we must first look within and to find our beauty as a soul and hear our beauty as a soul and to really know our beauty as a soul. Well, my teacher is also very fond of saying that beauty is most often spoken of with reference to worldly relationships and objects. And he really cautions people, it's like, don't use this word beauty with regard to the physical features of a man or a woman, or an expensive object that promotes, let's say, your status in society. But instead, how beauty is perceived is a reflection of our mind's inner purity and goodness. And yet, as long as the soul is bound within, let's say, nature's laws of cause and effect, this deepest essence of beauty, that is the soul, cannot be directly experienced. And many people just find it very difficult, if not downright resistant, when it comes to truly discovering themselves as a soul. You know, it's almost as if they consider discovering who I am as being too high of a cost to pay in terms of, well, what do I have to let go of in order to find myself? But you know, when you think about it, in the end, when the body is in its transition, you have to let go of everything we thought we have accumulated in this life. Everything. Degrees, homes, families, savings accounts, 401ks, even right down to those family secrets that we once promised to be taken to the grave. Everything. So whatever we know, we identify ourselves with that, and thus we limit our understanding of who we truly are. And Richard Rohr, in his book, The Immortal Diamond, The Search for Our Truth Self, he has a great one-liner. You know, he says, your true self is who you are and always have been in God. I like that. And elsewhere, Joseph Ryell, a beautiful painted arrow, also states something very similar in his book, Becoming Medicine, where he says that the way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are because you're already medicine. Nobody gives it to you. You're already it. You know, it's a framework for all growth and transformation in our lives, and all of that begins with seeking. Well, welcome to tonight's show, you know, celebrating divine feminine energy in all things. And if you're looking on the calendar now, or maybe you're looking on the calendar all week so far, you know that this coming Sunday is Mother's Day. And if you're like me and perhaps the rest of the world, your thoughts are focused on the women in our lives who have not only given birth to us, but also whether or not they were related to us, have nurtured us in their own way or taught us life lessons, whether it be formally in school as that school teacher or informally out of school. Could have been that neighbor who just had a way with her words and her kindness that she showed. Or about the women who have been instrumental in some way by shaping us into the men and women of who we are today. And you know, for the past couple of weeks, if not earlier, you know, we have been bombarded with all kinds of advertisements for Mother's Day hints for gifts, such as flowers or jewelry or dinner reservations or cards. And, you know, surprisingly, as we're making all these plans to have just the perfect day, surprisingly, few people know about the origins of Mother's Day, which actually took place back in the early 1900s. And many variations of this story, but this story, you know, is just the one version that I like to tell. And it all started with a woman named Anna Jarvis, who led a campaign for an official holiday of honoring mothers back in 1905. You know, that was the year her mother had passed. And the first larger scale celebration of the holiday was when, you know, in 1908, when Anna Jarvis held a public memorial for her mother in her hometown of Grafton, West Virginia. And anybody out there from Grafton, you know, give me a call and say hello, because that is actually the birthplace of Memorial Day. Well, you see, you know, a little backstory to this. Anna's mother played a very important role in uniting women for good causes. And Anne Revis Jarvis cared for wounded soldiers on both sides of the field during the Civil War and in its aftermath. And she organized a Mother's Friendship Day, which had as its goal to foster reconciliation between former Union and Confederate soldiers by having them come together along with their mothers, you know, from both sides. And I like that. Bring your mother. Let's celebrate. And over the next few years, her daughter, Anna, really pushed to have this holiday officially recognized. And it was celebrated increasingly in more and more states until finally in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson, he signs this proclamation, making Mother's Day an official holiday to take place the second Sunday of May, which is still celebrated today. And this year it falls on May the 11th. You know, in the first few years of this holiday's official existence, Anna Jarvis, you know, she observed that the florists and the candy makers and the card makers and even charities use Mother's Day to make an extra buck. Does that sound familiar? The commercialization of Mother's Day, according to her, defeated the whole point of the holiday that was supposed to be about celebrating the personal, individual connection between a mother and her children. And many churches, even to this day, and other organizations are preparing for record attendance by mothers and their families. I mean, I hear it more from men and women that, you know, the greatest gift the mother would want from her children is go to church with me on Sunday. You know, it's a simple request, but I hear that over and over again. So attending church and even in schools this week, children have been making cards. And actually one girl said that they've been growing little carnations or marigolds to be given out to their mothers this Sunday. I think they're going to take them home on Friday, so they have them. But yeah, they've been growing them. They're excited. And there will be flowers galore given out to mothers and grandmothers from marigolds and carnations and tulips and everything else, roses. From their adoring children to roadside shops selling bouquets and orchids for those who need to be reminded to pick up flowers for their mothers in their lives. You know, you can easily find them along the road. Yet, you know, despite this wonder and despite the splendor and the joy demonstrated by many in celebrating Mother's Day, Mother's Day for many women and many men has become a constant reminder of painful experiences. Because you see, for many, their biological mothers could not nurture them, let alone provide a safe home for them to grow up in. Because many children faced harsh discipline and shame as they experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over and over again and again. Now, some women and men have a strong desire to be mothers and fathers, or grandmas and grandpas, who will celebrate and love their children. But for one reason or another, they have experienced miscarriages, or stillbirths, or other medical issues, or have lost children to a disease or illnesses, even random accidents that have really exacerbated their pain. And just heighten their grief each year on Mother's Day. So for me, Mother's Day has always been about an emotional mixture of celebration and loss and gratitude and forgiveness, as I believe Mother's Day ought to be more inclusive and honoring all women at any age. So with that being said, I'd like to share with you a Christian prayer, a Christian reflection that I came across years and years and years ago that I haven't found anything better that captures the celebration, gratitude, and honor of all women. And it's simply entitled, A Prayer for Mothers. It says, "For our mothers who have given us life and love, that we may show them reverence and love, we pray to the Lord. For mothers who have lost a child through death, that their faith may give them hope, and that their families and friends will support and console them, we pray to the Lord. For women, though without children of their own, who, like mothers, have nurtured and cared for us, we pray to the Lord. For mothers who have been unable to be a source of strength, who have not responded to their children and have not sustained their families, we pray to the Lord. And therefore, loving God, as a mother gives life and nourishment to her children, so you watch over your children. Bless these women that they may be strengthened as mothers, and let the example of their faith and love shine forth, and grant that we, their sons and daughters, may honor them always with a spirit of profound respect. Grant this through Christ our Lord. Amen." You know, indeed, it's a beautiful prayer that you can also use in moments of reflection. So if you'd like a copy of that prayer, send me an email at www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. I'll be glad to send that out to you. I just think it's very beautiful and very timely in terms of, you know, celebrating Mother's Day, because it really does capture, you know, all women, the celebration of all women. But, you know, again, if you've been listening to me for some time, you know, I'm a history buff. I love history. And it's ironic that down throughout history, women were made to bear the brunt of society's problems, either directly or indirectly. And more often than not, they were forced to suffer in silence. And yet in her book, The Other Side of Silence, the author Urvashi Putalia raises the question, how do we reach beyond the stories into the silences women hide? How can we assume that speech, you know, the breaking of silence, is in and of itself a good thing? Well, I would like to ask if there is a way in which people's stories, notwithstanding all their problems, can somehow expand and stretch the definitions and boundaries of history and find a place in it. Do people's stories have a place in history? Is there some way in which history can make space for the small individual voice? And folks, from where I sit, I say yes. Without a doubt, yes. Because, you know, the suffering and the pain and the misery no longer have power over women when they realize the power they have always possessed from the beginning, their voice. Their voice. I mean, down through centuries upon centuries, women have been forced into silence through either intimidation or coercion or violence done directly to them. You know, the thought was, take away their voice, and you've taken away their power. But when women find their voice, look out and get out of the way. They will no longer be silent. How do I know? I sit with them. I counsel them. We listen to each other. And when they find their voice, you're not going to put that toothpaste back in the tube. They are so empowered because they found their healing. And you've heard me say this before, but in the work I have done and still do, I'm often saddened by women who believe that when it comes to addressing their physical, psychological, emotional, even spiritual problems, they still consider themselves powerless and without a voice. You know, perhaps this is a result of never feeling valued or even being allowed to use their voice. Because, admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their insights and their strengths as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing, let alone achieving anything meaningful in their lives. And that's just not true. The power lies within. There's power in the voice. And how are you going to silence a voice? How are you going to do that? You might be able to silence one voice, another will spring forth. You might be able to silence 1,000 voices, 10,000 will also rise up. You cannot silence the voice. But you know, most of the time, people are content and they get comfortable. They get comfortable to live for brief moments of joy and celebration, you know, and, you know, marked off by transitional milestones of, let's say, baptisms or marriages or birthdays or graduations or promotions and retirements and so on and so forth. And yet, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people often feel overwhelmed, not only by the concept that the answers they seek lie within themselves, but also by the belief that this inner freedom and this peace and this joy and power and unconditional love are all too good to be true. And yet the greatest effect, hearing the cries of others, the greatest effect that it has on us, not only comes from getting in touch with our own soul's voice, but it also awakens us to be able to hear the cries of those who believe they have no voice today. You know, there's always been in society a pattern of just disenfranchising the weak and the wounded. You know, people who have been labeled as unlovable and untouchable and therefore unreachable. But there's also existed a pattern. When others are able to heal within their hearts and souls, the cries of the vulnerable in society, healing takes place on many, many levels, heart to heart, life to life, soul to soul. Now, for some, disenfranchisement was due to their disease or their illness. For others, it was due to their poverty. And still, for others, it was due to their gender or their race or their religion or their politics or their social class. You know, because many in society preferred that such people not be seen, let alone heard from. And yet, just like the cries from our ancestors and those who have been victims of crimes against humanity, they can never be silenced. So too are the cries of the disenfranchised heard above the hustle and bustle and the din of everyday life. Because their cries are not only heard deep within the soul, but also their pain can be given a voice through those who speak for them. You know, I've had the honor, and I say the honor, of working with generations of women who have been made to carry heartbreaking, emotional, psychological, physiological, even spiritual wounds in silence. In fact, there's many, many times when women who live today still carry these burdens from generations and generations ago, by the way they were raised or even the trauma that's been handed down in their DNA. And yet there is tremendous healing for women who, once they find their voices, use their voices and energy to transform generations. Not just themselves, they transform generations. And you know, the human voice has this kind of power because it carries with it the energy of its vibration. And this is why people who deny the truth can't tolerate those who mention the truth, or at least have a different perspective. Think about it. Here's a good example of what I mean. You know, one of the major psychosocial spiritual obstacles I run into when counseling others occurs when emotionally or psychologically wounded people, when they are genuinely frightened and immobilized by their potential for healing and inner growth. Because, you know, failure is not the only thing that people fear. The very idea of finding inner peace and freedom can also become immobilizing. And indeed, this is true for us to really ask ourselves, what has so wounded us that allows us to continuously act out of our woundedness in relationships and then expect different results? And we wonder why we don't heal. We wonder why we don't have a better world or a better neighborhood or better relationships. What has so wounded us that allows us to continuously act out of those wounds in our relationships and then expect different results? So in the second half of this broadcast, I'm going to share with you aspects of the divine feminine and masculine energy that creates an opportunity for all people to heal. So if you would like to call in, again, that number is 888-627-6008, and I am taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how, despite the wonder and splendor and joy demonstrated by many, many people in celebrating Mother's Day this Sunday, Mother's Day for many women and men has become a constant reminder of painful experiences. Now, for many, they might say, well, my biological mother just couldn't nurture me. And I don't know if she was even able to do that. Or they might say that, you know, my mother just couldn't provide a safe home for me growing up. Because many children face harsh discipline and shame, as they may have experienced generational traumas that were being lived out over and over again and again. And, you know, there are some women out there and men who really want to be fathers and mothers. They want to be grandmothers and grandfathers, who they want to have children, but for one reason or another, they've experienced miscarriages, stillbirths, other medical issues, or have lost children to disease and illnesses, even random accidents that have really exacerbated their pain and grief each year on Mother's Day. And this was something that my wife and I really struggled with before we had our children. We experienced 3 miscarriages. We didn't know whether or not we would be able to have children. There was just no explanation for it. And there was tremendous burden, tremendous pain that both my wife and I thought that we would have to carry for the rest of our lives. And we had just this deep, 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 deep concern, deep longing to have children, prayed for those children. And we would do everything in our power to be very good mother and a very good father. Why couldn't we have children? 3 miscarriages. You know, and I've sat with women who've had stillbirths, and I've sat with men whose wives have had stillbirths or another medical issue or have lost children to, let's say, diseases or illnesses or even random, let's say, car accidents. And it just really heightens their pain and grief as a reminder on each Mother's Day. And so for me, Mother's Day has always been about this emotional mixture of celebration with gratitude and forgiveness, as I believe Mother's Day ought to be more inclusive and honor all women at any age. I mean, it's about celebrating the divine feminine energy, regardless of gender. Because, I mean, quite frankly, when we talk about the divine feminine energy and divine masculine energy, we're speaking of the potential of manifesting energy within us that we embody. I mean, it's energy. It's not a literal feminine masculine in the physical sense. Although we often inappropriately assign gender to this and say, well, that's all there is. That's the end all be all too, you know, being feminine or masculine, when we don't realize that everybody has male and female, feminine and masculine energy. We all have testosterone. We all have estrogen and so forth. It's in our DNA. Yeah, but, you know, these terms are not about gender or sex. It's not that the divine feminine energy is assigned strictly to females, nor is the divine masculine energy exclusively assigned to males. But rather, there's a completeness that I believe humanity is finally waking up to, but has yet to fully grasp. And regardless of gender, we can access both. And in doing so, we are empowered to be co-creators of healing and creativity and life. See, the divine feminine energy really empowers us to reflect and listen to our intuition. And this act of creation, of getting an idea and then birthing it, is in the realm of the divine feminine. And here are some other characteristics that men and women can experience in and with the divine feminine energy. Being able to pause, calm down, to reflect. Being good at taking care of yourself and loving yourself. Being able to find creative reflection and inspiration. Divine feminine energy. Able to empathize and be vulnerable. Able to make judgments by trusting, again, one's intuition that comes from your heart space. Feminine energy, divine feminine energy. Prioritizing our feelings and having good communication skills even without using words sometimes. Okay, remember, it is about the voice, but that doesn't sum up the end-all be-all to communication, because some of the best conversations we have can be without using words. Now, on the other hand, the divine masculine energy includes having empathy and compassion and honesty. There's integrity and confidence and vulnerability, strong boundaries, tempered with patience. However, when misused or out of balance, this masculine energy can become very toxic, very stoic. It can become very aggressive and dominating that we continue to see around us. Now, in the work I do with people healing their intergenerational trauma, I have come to understand that it involves not just healing the psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds of the past, the present, and the future generations, but it also involves a restoration or correcting the balance of the divine feminine and the divine masculine energies for all generations. Because you see, I believe the impact of healing intergenerational trauma can best be understood as a starburst. You know, kind of like a child's sparkler that they would light on the 4th of July. As one person heals from their trauma, that energy radiates out in all directions and time and dimension. Look at a sparkler next time. It just radiates out. All relationships, regardless of time and space, are transformed. It is not linear. It is not linear. It's like a starburst. It's like a sparkler that just goes out in all directions. And whether or not you know the person or people, you can certainly transform the lives of others, especially those that you have never met before. Complete strangers. You never know how you're going to impact somebody else's life through a smile, a kind word, just a gentle hand on their shoulder, or even if you don't have words to say, just by looking in their eyes. And that empathy speaks volumes. And vice versa. Vice versa. You know, people have impact on us all the time as well, just by, you know, a gentle smile or a hand on the shoulder or a kind word. You know, we're impacted, we're healed as well. I mean, this is how interconnected we are as human beings and the world in which we live. We are so interconnected. Just imagine how a single negative thought carries enough destructive energy to affect hundreds, if not thousands, each day. We don't have to look too far as the wars or the struggles or the violence that's going around. Just a single negative thought has a lot of destructive energy. However, imagine that same potential a single positive thought has. That's transformation. That brings healing to hundreds, thousands, millions each day. See, like I said, there is a completeness that I believe humanity is waking up to, but just really hasn't fully grasped it yet. Because when women heal from their wounds and they find and they use their voice, they certainly transform humanity. How? By helping women become better women and by helping men become better men. Because they begin to correct the imbalance of the divine feminine and masculine energies within themselves. And when men find their healing and transformation, they not only become better men, they also empower women to become better women. It's a restoration of the balance of divine feminine and masculine energies. As I said, we all have masculine and feminine energy that's not about gender or sex. We all have testosterone and estrogen. And regardless of gender, we can access both masculine and feminine characteristics, divinely empowered for us to be co-creators with healing, creativity, and life. Well, folks, I want to share with you now that I have a theory, and it's a pretty solid theory. I have to write a book about this one day. But I have a theory out there from the number of women I have spoken to about this and the number of men I have shared this theory with. And it all has to do with how men know when a woman is falling in love with them. Guys, how do you know? Did you know the moment a woman is starting to fall in love with you? Did you know the moment that your wife started to fall in love with you or your partner? When was that moment? See, I ask this question because this insight gives men a glimpse into not only understanding themselves a little bit better, but also helping women balance their feminine and masculine energy. So guys, what is your greatest strength? What's your greatest strength? Is it your biceps? Is it your stature? You know, all your buffness? Is it your bank account? The car you drive? Well, none of the above. Guys, our number one greatest strength is found in our hearts. That is our strength as men, our hearts. And here's where this theory comes in. I guarantee you, ladies, if you're out there listening, women, you know, remember the time that you started to fall in love with your boyfriend and you said, that's it. That's what I see. That I love him for that. It is the first time your boyfriend opened up his heart and allowed you to see it. He showed you his heart. Guys, you showed your girlfriend your heart. You showed somebody else your heart. And that's what they fell in love with, because that is the true strength of men. It has nothing to do with bicep strength or the leg strength. It's your heart. That's the divine masculine. And when men get in touch with that, they're balancing their masculine and feminine characteristics, that divine masculine feminine energy. The greatest strength, I will say this till the day I'm called home. The greatest strength in men is their hearts. And one of the first questions I ask whenever I'm doing couples counseling or marriage and family counseling, and the wife and the husband are arguing and are fighting, I was like, I have to remind the men, you know, this is what she fell in love with, your heart. Do you remember those early days? Do you remember exactly what you said? Or maybe you sang a song? Maybe you wrote a poem? there was something you did that she saw your heart. And she said, that's it. He's the one for me. Because he showed me that nobody else, he showed me his heart, his vulnerability. That's the greatest strength, guys. I guarantee you. That's what she fell in love with. So when I get a couple in couples counseling, you know, I ask the guys, like, now look, if this is what she fell in love with, your heart, your vulnerability, how you are with her, your gentleness, your kindness, your love, your strength, where did it go? Where did you go? Why did you close off your heart when you know deep down inside that's what she fell in love with? That's your greatest strength, but why hide that? Why cover it up? When men get in touch with their divine masculinity, their divine feminine energy, it empowers men to be better men, which also empowers women to be better women, which then empowers men to become better men, which then empowers women to be better women, and so on and so forth. It's not about a competition. It's about complementary. We have masculine and feminine characteristics, things that we have been divinely empowered with to be the co-creators with healing and that creativity throughout life. I mean, just imagine, you know, what Mother's Day would look like if we honored not just the role of mothers and mother figures in our lives, but what if we honored and celebrated the divine feminine energy in all things? I mean, this is powerful. There would be tremendous healing of all the injustices that were done to women, all the pain and misery that the men had suffered down through the centuries. We have the ability to heal. We came into the world with divine masculine and feminine characteristics. Why are we hiding it? Why aren't we showing it? Why are we settling for society's definition of what they think being a man is, or what they think being a woman is, when it has to do more with the divine energy? You know, I came across a place probably 7-8 years ago when I was visiting India. And, you know, that captures this very essence. You know, it's an ashram. It's a children's ashram. Actually, it's a mother and children's ashram in Vrindavan, India. And Vrindavan, if you know your Indian history, that is actually the birthplace of Krishna. And so it is revered. And the place I'm talking about is Vatsalya Gram, or translated into a mother's love. And it's a nonprofit, non-governmental, and it's an independent organization. And it's also registered under Society's Registration Act of 1860. But in 1992, Param Shakti Peeth, you know, she just worked very hard to mainstream marginalized people of society. And she gave, you know, priority to women and children because they were the most vulnerable in society and still are. And not only to alleviate other social economic inequalities that were just running rampant in India, however, it also, you know, that those inequalities, I should say, are just very detrimental to this inclusive development and actually impedes the growth of that nation as a whole. You know, back in 1992, this was all started. And, you know, this collective experience and insight and diverse perspectives of the founders have been this very solid foundation of the belief that the welfare and empowerment of children and women, especially within marginalized communities, are critical for bridging these disparities in society and alleviating poverty. It's also been a source of the holistic approach to the development and in creating the framework that is necessary to meet this central goal of the organization. You know, we're going to put mother, women and children, mothers first. And it's fascinating because, again, I visited with the women. I sat with the kids. And I've listened to their stories through their translators. The love that they show is just incredible. And you know what? It works. It works. A mother's love works. And ironically, the women that they take in, they don't necessarily have to be the biological mothers of the kids. In fact, many, many, many of the women are not. But yet they have this divine love that they can share with the kids. And let's say in a typical like apartment building style dwelling, you might have five children, you know, but you have three women. One is a mother. One acts like an aunt or an auntie. And the other one is more like a grandmother. So you have like three generations of women who act in the role of mother, auntie, and grandmother, you know, and no woman is turned away, no matter how old she is. She is brought in, and if she is elderly, she's the grandmother or the great-grandmother. The kids eat it up. The kids are nurtured, they're fed, they're clothed, they're housed, they're given great dental care, great health care, education, so on and so forth. And they thrive. Go figure. The nurturing qualities of that divine feminine energy works. It works. Right? And when they graduate, they graduate high school, or they're qualified to go on to, you know, skilled jobs, or if they want to go on to university, they are more than able to be able to do that because they're no longer considered marginalized. Okay? And they're, you know, they can be part of the mainstream economy, let's just say, and the growth of the nation is not going to be lopsided. It's not going to be unsustainable anymore. And I tell you, over the years, women are making a huge difference in India. You know, they're becoming educated. They're working jobs. They are having families and being able to work. The divine femininity, or the divine feminine energy, I should say, is working. It is transforming lives for the better. They are making a very positive impact. And if you want to check it out for yourself, here is that website. It's www.vatsalyagram.org. I'll spell that for you. It's VATSALYAGRAM as in Mike .org. So www.vatsalyagram.org. And everything you wanted to know about that organization and the work that they're doing, powerful, powerful work that they're doing, is right there on the website. So, healing ancestors from intergenerational trauma, celebrating the divine feminine energy in all people, balancing the divine feminine with the divine masculine, it heals. It reinforces a connection that we all have. We are so interconnected. And when we awaken to our soul consciousness, we're also empowered to live out this God connection that we have in human relationships. So namaste. The soul in me, the lighted soul, bows to the lighted soul of who you are. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And again, if you have any questions or concerns or just want to drop me a line, please do so at www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And until we talk with each other again in 2 weeks, everybody be safe. Everybody have a very nice Mother's Day. Everybody behave themselves, and everybody be well. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Hauk, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.